All right, welcome to the show. It's the Michael Slate Show, and we have a very exciting show for you today. At the back end of the show, we're going to be talking with Sansara Taylor, writer for RevCom.us, Revolution newspaper, and a founding member, actually a co-initiator of Refuse Fascism, RefuseFascism.org. This interview was done on the eve of nationwide protests July 7th, demanding this nightmare must end, the Trump-Pence regime must go. And when you hear the interview, you'll understand why I thought it was important to bring it to you. We talk about what's been happening in the world recently, the horrors and deadly threats carried out against immigrants, women, Muslims, oppressed nationalities, against humanity and the planet. And we talk about the need for the people to stand up against the regime, to step into and step up the effort to put a halt to the rapidly consolidating fascist system of rule, why it's necessary, why it's possible to end this nightmare, and what people should be doing now. Now, that's what we're going to be having at the end of the show, at the back end of the show. But before that, we're going to open up with a very special segment, a segment that I think is extremely important, right? It's something we really got to be thinking about, and I think it can add to the whole discussion we're going to be having with Sansara. But in particular, it can really add to people actually trying to wrestle with and figure out and move on how to stop this horrible situation that we got going, not just here, but what's going to affect and infect the planet, okay? And that is, we're going to be listening to a piece from Bob Avakian called "The Democrats Are Supposed to Be the Lesser of Two Evils, But I Don't Want to Vote for Them." That was the question that was asked Bob Avakian during the Q&A period of a speech that he gave called "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America. A Better World Is Possible." Now, for people who might not know, if you haven't listened to the show before, Bob Avakian is the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party and the architect of a whole new framework of human emancipation, the new synthesis of communism, which is popularly referred to as the new communist. And I'll tell you what, sisters and brothers, there is a major, major need. There is a major need for the work that Avakian has done. If you have any inkling or any thought at all about hating what's going on in this society, what's being done to people all over the world, and looking for a way to change all this, you got to get into the work that Avakian's done, and particularly you need to listen to the speech. So without any further ado, let's take a listen to "The Democrats Are Supposed to Be the Lesser of Two Evils, But I Don't Want to Vote for Them," from the Q&A section of Bob Avakian's talk.
So there's another question from the audience. Okay, let's take right down here, the second row.
Fortunately, as a Democrat, it has been long determined that to vote for the lesser of the two evils, right? Either the Dems or the Republican. But it has gotten to the point where both of them are just as worse. One is cancer and one is HIV. So you don't want to vote for either one of them. And that's what happened. Over 40% of people who could have voted, they didn't vote, or they voted for somebody else, or they vote somebody else in. Now, the problem being is, nothing is working, okay? But in the interim, I know the system sucks, but what are you supposed to do in the interim, okay?
The problem, you know, I don't want to sound flippant or silly, but the problem with voting for the lesser evil is, and I don't even like to use the word evil, but let's just take it there. The problem with voting for the lesser evil is that you're voting for evil. See, that's the problem. But let's you know, get deeper than that, because that could just be, you know, just a clever saying that doesn't have much meaning. The problem is you have the system that operates in certain ways, and it's, you know, it's not. I noticed, for example, Charles Blow, who's a columnist who, you know, writes for the New York Times, and he's a commentator sometimes on CNN. He's sort of a middle class black guy, and you know, he wrote this column about how terrible Trump is, but then he turned all of his anger at the end, or a lot of it, toward people who didn't vote, you know, and therefore you're responsible for why Trump is in now. But you see, we have to, let's step back a little bit and look at the larger picture. The reason that Trump is in is not because, you know, or that things have come to this situation, is not because, the cause of it is not that people didn't vote for Hillary Clinton. Because, let's step back a little bit, a lot of people did vote for Obama, and they got Obama, and then why do we get Trump? Because the kinds of things that the system is doing in this country and in the world lead a lot of people on the terms of the system to want to have this kind of fascist solution. And the Hillary Clintons and Barack Obamas of the world did not challenge the and cannot challenge the underlying assumptions and the underlying dynamics of the system that push people in that direction, that lead people in that direction. Let me give you an example. A lot, you know, you have people who said that they voted for Obama. Look, I'm not a racist. I voted for Trump, but I'm not a racist because I voted for Obama, not once, but twice. But what were they looking for when they voted for Obama? They were looking for someone who would tell them that this is a post-racial society where there's no longer any discrimination and oppression. And if you want proof, look, we elected a black president. I even voted for him. So now, don't come around and tell me about how there's any oppression going on. If you're not doing well, it's your own fault. And I don't want to hear about the police shooting down people because this is a post-racial society. We voted for Obama. That proves it. So if somebody got shot by the police, they must have been doing something wrong. See, a lot of these white people who voted for Obama and then voted for Trump, they wanted Obama to prove that there was no longer any oppression so nobody should complain about it anymore. And as much as people don't want to talk about this, Obama said the same thing. When Obama got reelected in 2012, in his victory speech on election night, he said, if you work hard and do the right thing in this country, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but this is the essence of what he said. If you work hard and do the right thing in this country, you can be anything you want to be and get ahead. Now, that's a lie. Millions of people's lives prove that's a lie. And what is, stop and think a minute. I pointed this out before. There was a woman in the Trump campaign in Ohio who had to resign from the, think about this, she had to resign from the Trump campaign because she openly said, basically, there's no discrimination in this society. If black people are complaining and they're not doing well, it's their own fault. She had to resign after she said that, but Obama's speech said exactly the same thing. She just said it in nasty terms, and Obama said it in very hopeful terms. But think of the logic, it's the same thing. Listen to Obama's words and think of the meaning and the implication. If you work hard and do the right thing, then you can succeed. What's the logical conclusion? If you are not succeeding, then you are not working hard and doing the right thing, which is exactly the same thing this woman in Ohio said, but Obama said it in hopeful terms. And, you know, I could go on and on about Obama, how he's tied in with all, how he, when he came up, talked about himself as a community organizer. What he really did was get involved with all these real estate interests in Chicago that destroyed public housing and, you know, dissipated and dispersed people all over the city, which, you know, look, I'm not one of these people that believes the line that some people run out in Chicago. It was better when we had a more organized gang structure. The problem now is that all the gang structure is broken down, and so all these crazy youth are running around here with no discipline and no organization. But the fact is that the destruction of the housing projects in Chicago did have the effect of dispersing a lot of people around and actually knocking down a lot of this gang structure. And there is a lot of craziness that's arisen out of it. So I guess I just said, no, I don't actually agree with that. But there is something there. But think about this. Obama is the head of a system. He's not an individual acting on his own. Whatever, you know, first of all, I mean, he's going around now making these multi-thousand-dollar speeches to businessmen in Brazil and all these other places promoting, you know, the globalized capitalism. So that's where he's coming from. You know, but nevertheless, think about it this way. What did Obama say when Freddie Gray was murdered by the police? Yes, he was murdered by the police, and of course they got off. But what did Obama say when the youth said, that's goddammit, that's enough? And they rose up and burned down a few things. Obama went on TV and called them thugs. So this provides fertile ground then for the kind of thing that's represented by Trump. Because you have this illusion that with this president, Obama, we have now entered into a post-racial society, and nobody should be complaining about being discriminated against and oppressed and murdered by the police and so on. And then when people do righteously rise up against things like police murder, then all these people, you know, and they'll tell you. I remember one woman said, well, I voted for Obama, but when he got up and said that Trayvon Martin could have been his son, that was just too much for me. See, and the only reason Obama said that was because, you know, he recognized and his advisors told him, you are going to lose all credibility among black people and anybody who cares about black people if you don't say something in the face of this. So it is this system that's creating the conditions. You see, what I was getting at in my talk is that this is a system that's had white supremacy woven into it from the very beginning. And there is no alternative that the ruling forces can put up that's going to get rid of white supremacy. Not Hillary Clinton, not Barack Obama, not any Democrat that comes along. Not Bernie Sanders, not anybody. They can't get rid of the white supremacy. They can't get rid of the male supremacy. They can't get rid of the whole exploitative nature of the system itself. And everything all the exploitation that it depends on all throughout the world, with little children working for, you know, pittances, making a lot of the products that go into cell phones and computers and other things. They can't do away with all that. So therefore, when people, you know, want to cling to their white supremacy, and a Trump comes forward and overtly appeals to that, they're going to go with that, and there's nobody in the ruling circles that's going to really oppose that. You know, Hillary Clinton may talk about, well, these people that support Trump are a basket of deplorables, or whatever she called it. The only thing she said wrong about that, in my opinion, she said half of them. Unfortunately, it's more than half. Not everybody who voted for Trump is a racist, but every one of them was willing to support a racist, which makes them a racist. Okay? So, and all these things, like the question of women, the subordinate position of women, denying women the right not only to abortion, but even birth control, denying them the right to have control of their own bodies in that way. This is something that the Christian fascists and the Republican Party in general have been pushing aggressively, you know, passing all kinds of repressive laws and on the state level and so on. And the Democrats will only half-heartedly oppose them. Why? Because to really oppose them, you have to go up against the religious fundamentalism. You have to call into question the whole subordinate position of women in this society and say and point out and say that's what it is and it should go. And it can't go under the system, so there's no Democrat who's really going to do that. You know, and the Democrats are always trying to prove that they're, you know, more patriotic than the Republicans, at least as patriotic as the Republicans. They support the wars at least as much. Now, I'll get to your question about religion in a second, but you know, here's another example. There was a case where this guy, Michael Nidau, I think was his name, from California, challenged the Pledge of Allegiance, in particular the phrase, under God, one nation under God. Now, it's interesting, just to take a little more time. That phrase was not originally in the Pledge of Allegiance. It was added in the 1950s under President Eisenhower during the Cold War against the Soviet Union to contrast the religious America with the atheistic communism of the Soviet Union. It was the anti-communism that injected that under God into the Pledge of Allegiance. And Michael Nidau challenged this, and his challenge went, because his kid was being forced to say this in school. And it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And it's interesting that the head of the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice at that time, Rehnquist, said to Michael Nidau in this Supreme Court hearing, well, under God, it's not promoting any particular God. And Michael Nidau said, I don't see how you can argue that under God means no God. So obviously God's being promoted here. It's one thing for people to have religious freedom. It's another thing for the state to impose religion on people. And that's what making kids say one nation under God is doing, clearly. And the Supreme Court ruled against this guy, but he had a very good argument. Well, what did the Democratic Party do in the middle of this? A whole bunch of Democratic Party Congress people came out of the steps of Congress and very vociferously repeated the Pledge of Allegiance, emphasizing the phrase under God to prove that they're every bit as religious as the Christian fascists in the Republican Party. So these people are not going to challenge any of the fundamental assumptions of the system. They can't. So when the system goes to work creating conditions that reinforce what leads to a Trump, the Democratic Party is no answer to it. Cannot provide an answer because it's operating on the basis of the same system that's produced this. And so people, you know, go down the road of supporting Democrats like people supported Obama, only to find that the dynamics of things lead to a situation where more and more people are supporting a fascist. And it's only by breaking out of that that you can find any solution to it. And so the question, the system does suck. And the question is, what do? We have to break out of that framework and go up against, you know, this system. At least now we're talking about on the level of driving out the fascist regime that's actually come to power. And I would argue on a more fundamental level, we need to go up against the system to get rid of it altogether as the more fundamental and ultimate solution. So that's one thing. By the way, on religious freedom, you notice how they have this whole thing, like there's a case going to the Supreme Court where this baker in somewhere, I think maybe in Colorado or somewhere, is refused to make a cake for a wedding of a gay couple. And he cited religious freedom. It's against my religious principles to do this. Well, then f***ing don't have a business, okay? That's the first thing. But, you know, if you want to make cakes for yourself with your own artistry, fine. You know, but if you're in business, that's different. You know, and think about the logic. You know, my religion tells me that I shouldn't have to serve women. It's against my religion. Well, you can justify anything in the name of your religion. You can invent religions to justify things. Going back to Chicago again, there's this prominent gang leader named Jeff Fort, who was a leader of the Peystone Nation gang. And he was in and out of jail. And at one time after he came out of a long stint in prison, he got a bright idea. He said, I'm going to change the name of the organization from the Peystone Nation to the El Rukans. And I'm going to declare myself a Muslim religious leader. And the El Rukans are going to be a religious organization. Guess what? Jeff Fort is spending the rest of his life in a federal prison somewhere. They didn't give a f- about his religious freedom when it got in the way of what they wanted to do. They didn't care that he claimed, well, it's my religious beliefs that are leading me to do this. So it all depends on what the content of your religious beliefs is.
All right, welcome back. That's Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and it's the Q&A section. It's taken from the Q&A section of a speech he gave a little while back called "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept the Fascist America. A Better World is Possible." And sisters and brothers, if you're agonizing about the Trump-Pence regime, but you don't understand where this came from, why it's happening, and most importantly, what can be done to stop it and whether a better world really is possible, you need to be watching this film. Okay, you need to watch this deep analysis and call to action, the call to action in Bob Avakian's speech. And again, I'll repeat the title of it. It's "The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept a Fascist America. A Better World is Possible." And you need to not only watch it yourself and talk with people about it, but you need to spread it all over the place, all right? And I can't emphasize that enough. And if you want to get access to the film, you can find it at revcom.us. And you can also find it at refusefascism.org, all right? And I really, really, really hope that you follow through on this and you take it up, you study it and you spread it, because we are in a hellified situation right now and we need to understand what's going on and we need to actually meet what's expected of us from the people of the world, because that's actually what's at stake, all right? It's the survival of the entire planet. And we're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with Sansara Taylor, so stay tuned.
I see kids fighting to find a voice. They've been swimming in a sea without a shore or a choice. Sometimes it's like I'm without a home. Last night I walked 1,000 miles alone.
All right, welcome back. That's Outer National, all right? Check that out. It's a great song, and it's a great band. And when you find your stuff, grab it up, listen to it. Because I guarantee you, sometime it's going to be something that people are going to be talking about. Yo, I listened to that before all this happened tonight. They helped me really get through these times with the kind of attitude that we need. Now we're going to go into my conversation with Sansara Taylor. And as I mentioned at the beginning, this was recorded before July 7th, when there were nationwide demonstrations demanding this nightmare must end, the Trump-Pence regime must go. All right, I'm really pleased to welcome to the show Sansara Taylor, all right? And Sansara is, for people who listen to the show regularly, you've heard her many times before, and it's always really enlightening and important when we talk with her. She's a writer for revcom.us Revolution newspaper, and she's one of the initiators of refusefascism.org. And she's joining us on the eve of these nationwide protests. And Sansara, welcome to the show.
Michael, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're going to do as many of these questions as we have. I want to have about 20 minutes at the end of the show to actually have people be able to call in, okay? And we have there's a question already on Facebook. So let's jump into this. A year and a half into the Trump-Pence regime, and where are we at in terms of the fascist regime and the fight to get rid of it? Let's talk about where we're at.
Well, I think I want to start with that word fascism, which is an important and an accurate description for what we are facing. You know, the Trump-Pence regime, it's every day there's new headlines, every day there's new mania, there's new outrages, there's new atrocities. But it's important that there's a method to the madness, and it can be dizzying. And a lot of people can feel, oh, it's too much to take, it's a nightmare, I'm tuning it out. But here's the deal. We are facing a fascist regime in power. It is not yet consolidated fascism, but it is moving rapidly to do so. And by fascism, this is something Bob Avakian goes into deeply in this speech that you were just announcing, the Trump-Pence regime must go, and airing a clip of. But fascism is a qualitative change in the form of rule. We have been living in an imperialist country, a country that spread its tentacles of exploitation all over the world, that has carried out wars of aggression, domination, that is founded on white supremacy and slavery back in its foundation, and that's been woven through this country's social fabric and legal structure down to today, with mass incarceration and new Jim Crow and misogyny as well, the anti-immigrant thing as well. All this has been part of America, but with the coming to power of the Trump-Pence regime, and it's both Trump and his open white supremacy and his open misogyny and his open grotesque America First warmongering, as well as Mike Pence and his Christian biblical literalist fascism, his Handmaid's Tale version of what the world should be. And he is deadly serious, and there's a deadly brew of these Christian fundamentalist theocrats and the straight-up white supremacist good old boy Donald Trump brand of fascism. And fascism is a qualitative change in the form of rule such that it completely eliminates and strips away what have been traditionally certain democratic rights, limited protections that people have to stand up, to seek redress in the face of injustice, even the notion that this country should be inclusive, multicultural, which was something that was fought for. It was fought for in the 60s. Victories won, and there was a certain different ethos that was never fully achieved, but at least put forward and ascribed to by millions and given lip service by Obama. And Trump is saying no to all of that. Ethnic cleansing, ripping children away from their parents, a nursing baby from her mother's arms, when people flee their homelands and seek asylum in this country, locking them in cages, children in cages, thousands, more than 3,000 still separated. And Trump is forced to say he'll keep the families together. So his response is do away with courts and build a concentration camp on military bases, build enough camps to house 20,000 or 100,000 immigrant families together. This is a fascist regime, and that's the dynamic of it. First, they come for the immigrants. Then they come for the Muslims. The Muslim ban is in effect. And who are they coming for next? It's the Supreme Court. It's women. It's LGBTQ rights. It's threats of wars against the people of the world. And it's the, I know the headlines today are Scott Pruitt was forced to resign, but the damage he did, the deregulation he's already locked in place, the acceleration of the global catastrophe of climate change, is already damage been done. And the person that they're bringing in behind him, Wheeler, is just as horrendous. I mean, the scandals were nothing. The scandals are trivial that got all the media attention. The devastation they're doing to this planet and to the ability of life to sustain, all of this together is what I'm talking about as a fascist regime. And it has to be removed from power. It has to be driven from power through the actions of the people. And we'll talk about this, but I want to just say, I know I'm giving you a long answer, but I want to say that we have seen, where are we at in the first year and a half? We have seen capitulation and collaboration, normalization from the Democratic Party over and over and over again, every step of the way. And we have to confront that the people are going to have to act outside of the normal channels, outside the official channels. And we've seen some of this. In the last couple of weeks, we've seen people pour into the streets once again in protest, and that's righteous, and it's needed. Hundreds of thousands of people in over 750 cities, occupations, civil disobediences. The heroic woman, Patricia Okomo, who climbed up on the Statue of Liberty and refused to get down and declared she'd stay till all the children were reunited. We need more of this kind of defiance outside the regular political channels where people put something on the line. But fundamentally, this has to go in the direction of a massive movement to drive out the entire regime through sustained protest, nonviolent protest, which has been done all over the world. Many people have done it, but it has to be done here, and it will not happen in the ballot box. And November is too late. So we are in a critical time, a moment of tremendous escalation of the consolidation of fascism, but also a moment when people are waking up once again and shaking off some of the normalization. But there are big stakes that you cannot go back to sleep, and you can't just say, okay, we marched, we got angry, and now somebody else will handle it. No, we've got to keep in the streets and handle this ourselves.
Yeah, and it's important, because one of the things I wanted to ask you is exactly that. It's like, look, there's a way to stop this, but it means that people have to actually change their thinking around the whole thing. I mean, there's a lot of people who are going out and doing the kinds of things you're talking about, which is really great. It's important. It's important that the people stepped up around the kids, the immigrant kids, and the families being ripped apart. It's important that people stand up around all of this, around what's happening to women, all of the, you know, to oppressed nationalities, all of these things that are coming down. And they tend to come down in like waves of bam, 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 we're going to hit it. And then, you know, there's some whatever, stepping back or doing whatever. But then again, people start to normalize things to a certain extent. There's a pull, I think, to actually look at things as like, well, we can, you know, there's a way to, you know, basically, maybe it comes down to there's a problem with some people actually, or too much this being in the air of adjusting to a new normal, something that's leading to adjusting to a new normal. And now there's a way to stop this, but it means that people have to change their thinking about what's going on and what it's going to take, don't you think?
Yeah, I think right now I want to speak to the people who are maladjusted to this and do not want this to be the new normal, which I think right now is millions and millions of people. I mean, really, people who don't want to see children in cages. It's inhuman. Who don't want to go to the days where women are once again forced to have children against their will, which is what is looming in a matter of months if this Supreme Court nominee goes through, any of the people on Trump's shortlist, ending Roe versus Wade, stripping away the protections that are recently won and hard fought for LGBTQ people, completely eradicating the access, which is already shrinking, of Black people and Latino people to the ballot. All of this is already on the table, shrinking and taking away even what limited, and I really mean paper-thin limited protections that people have had from government intrusion, surveillance, wrongful imprisonment, abuse and brutality, and even murder by police. All of this, you know, is being the people who don't want to accept this, you know, who really are shaken to their core right now. This we must not allow to become normal. But the thing that we need to confront now is, look, the Democratic Party and the elections are not going to be the solution. This is what everybody is talking about. Everybody's being told, and we've been told our whole lives, everybody grows up in America, you go, oh, you got the voting booth. Oh, you got this. Oh, you can call your representative. And let me just tell you, there is no, I mean, everybody knows it. If you do the math, if you map it out, there is no electoral road to stop a fascist Supreme Court nominee from being nominated and from being cemented in place. There is none. I mean, Chuck Schumer will tell you that they don't have the votes. People are filled with magical thinking that somebody at the top, who, you know, the cabinet of Democrats and Republicans who approved that white supremacist Jeff Sessions, who approved that Christian fascist Neil Gorsuch, who approved Betsy DeVos, who gave their agreement to stop Scott Pruitt, are somehow going to step in and decide 15 months into this regime that they're going to fight Trump on a Supreme Court nomination that they've been waiting for years to get. That's not going to happen. It's going to have to come from the people. So one, even if you follow up their own logic, you can't stop it by relying on the normal channels. And that does pose a question. If you have a system whose normal channels will put a white supremacist, woman-hating, you know, grotesque specimen of humanity like Donald Trump in the White House, what kind of system do you have? If you have a system that doesn't have any mechanism to prevent the highest court in the land from banning Muslims from countries that have been decimated by the U.S. who are fleeing and seeking refuge from entering this country, what kind of a system do you have? If you have a system that has no mechanism to prevent the highest court in the land from revoking women's most basic right, most fundamental right, the right that underlies their ability to participate in society, which is the right to control their own reproduction, to decide for themselves whether or when and whether to have a child. If you have a system that doesn't have any mechanism to protect those basic things, then you should look into what kind of system that is and what kind of revolution is needed to get rid of that system fundamentally. And on a more immediate level, we have to, even if you're not ready to discard that system as a whole, you have to confront that this is an extraordinary time where you have to step outside of those normal channels. And you have to wage struggle in the streets. And I will say that the people, and you see the potential, in the 750 cities that went out in protest last Saturday. And I was out there among people, and I talked to a lot of people, especially at the end, and they were reticent to go home. And a lot of them said to us, you know, I knew I had to be here because I can't sit at home, but I don't feel this was enough. More is needed. And they are right. And if you feel that way, you are right. But what is more that is needed is to join with a movement, refusefascism.org, become an organizer in this movement that is carving out a path that starts with hundreds now, hundreds in the streets and cities around the country, and growing and fighting to bring forward thousands and then tens of thousands and eventually millions to raise the only demand that rises to the order of the day, which is this nightmare must end. The Trump-Pence regime must go. That's the only way you reverse this direction. Fascism cannot be voted out. It must be driven out, and it can be driven out. And all over the world, people have done this. They did this 2 months ago in Armenia. They did it 2 years ago in South Korea. They did it before that in Egypt. People went into the streets and said, okay, you don't have a mechanism to remove this hated regime. We will plant ourselves in the streets, and we will not move. And our plan and our vision is we will not be provoked, but we will not be deterred, and we will not stop until the regime is driven out. Now, if you had millions of people and millions, if the millions who hate what's going on acted in that way, rather than sitting back and gambling on the hope that some Democrat who keeps capitulating is going to stop this for you, or gambling on the hope that some magic check and balance, which is being eviscerated and shattered by this fascist regime, is going to stop this for you. If you'd stop sitting at home and gambling on that, if people would come out on the streets and demand the regime go, we could create a political crisis in this country that forces the regime out and wrenches a different direction in this country. That is an act short of revolution. Now, many of us would see the need to go forward and fight so you get rid of the system that gave rise to all of this.
Well, let me ask you
and
this,
that's
because
something people have to get into. I want to just finish this one thought. That is possible to drive out a regime. And this Saturday is about carving out a different path and showing up and becoming part of carving out a different path that millions can join with, that is relying on ourselves in the streets, outside the official channels. I'm sorry. Thank you, Michael.
That's all right. I wanted to ask you this question because it came from a caller earlier, and it actually fits with what you've just been talking about. It says two problems I see, and this is it was sent into Facebook. It says two problems I see. One is a problem with movements tailing the Democratic Party. The other is the focus on identity politics, where leftist activists argue over who's more oppressed and what about revolutionaries who don't want to go back to bourgeois norms but want to throw out both Republicans and Democrats.
Oh, these are three great questions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, you know, if you don't want to go back to either the Democrats or the Republicans, I am 100% with you. We need to get serious about getting organized for an actual revolution. And there's a strategy for that, how we can win, how we can really make revolution, and for how a revolution in the most powerful imperialist country could actually be prepared for, why it's needed, and how it could be won when there's a crisis of such dimensions that it's actually a revolutionary crisis and people are not acclimated to going along in the millions and millions and looking for a way to bring this system down and bring a whole radically different world into being, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic of North America, authored by Bob Avakian. When that kind of crisis arises and the time to fight to defeat this system and its enforcement apparatus, its repression, its military, all of that, there's a strategy for that. And you go to revcom.us and you get into that. You join the Revolution Club. You'd be part of representing for that, spreading that. And as you're learning more about it and working your way towards joining the leadership of that revolution, the Revolutionary Communist Party. If that's where you're coming from, you have to see and join with the fight to unite all who can be united to drive out this fascist regime. That is an essential part of building up the strength and creating more favorable conditions for a revolution and stopping an absolute catastrophe for humanity. Now, if you're not coming from that perspective, you still need to join in the struggle to drive out a fascist regime. And the point, this gets to the second thing about identity politics and who's more oppressed and all this. What we need to do is we need to proceed. And there's an incredibly important slogan and stand that refusefascism.org has put forward. And it is this. It says, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And that is what we need to proceed from, all of us. Revolutionaries, people who are not revolutionaries, people who want what Bernie calls revolution, people who were supporters of Hillary and think that it would have been okay if we had just gone that way, people who, like me, think the core problem is in the essential nature of America, and other people who think that Trump is betraying the principles of America and they want actually to live up to those principles. Wherever you're coming from, if you recognize that we are facing a fascist America that is endangering humanity, we put that first and we stand shoulder to shoulder, working together to rely on and move the only force that can drive this regime out, which is the millions of people who are in agony right now and their struggle for all of us to get out of our comfort zone and lead that and organize others to do that and to work together in that process. And then the question of not tailing behind the Democratic Party, look, this is another thing. You put the interests of humanity first. And if you do that, I'll tell you, all this business right now is going along, what's the most electable position? You know, how do we get in for November? And everything's calculated towards that. I'll tell you, throughout history, at every major juncture, what was electable is not what was right and what advanced history. If you go to civil rights struggle, it was not electable to oppose segregation in Alabama or Mississippi in 1960, 1962, 1964, even frankly today probably in many places. But it was right, and the people who put their bodies on the line to fight for that changed what happened among the electable politicians, not by appealing to them and not by calibrating their demands to what could become the most realistic electable position, but by taking as a compass what actually would solve the problems that the oppressed were facing. And that should be the compass and guiding post. And in this moment, in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America is the dividing line that everybody needs to measure themselves against. And any amount of conciliation on that, because you think it's more realistic to get somebody elected, and then you hope they'll really have the power to do it, Baba Bacon has made the point, it's a profound point, the more you try to make the Democratic Party be what it is not and what it never will be, the more you end up becoming what it actually is, which is an imperialist ruling class party. And we have to fight to change what is possible to stop a fascist America. And if we fight for that and don't compromise on that, sure, a lot of people are still going to vote. That's fine. Some of us are going to struggle over why that's not the most effective means of making change, and it's actually harmful. But we can stand shoulder to shoulder. The decisive thing is that you be in the streets and be part of refusing to accept a fascist America.
You know, Sansar, one of the things that even saying that, it's sort of, you know, this idea, I want people to get a sense of, like, when we talk about what's going to happen at these rallies and talking about people wanting to come into it, what's the difference going to be in the kind of, like, the movement that sort of, in a way, it kicked off a year ago, more than a year ago, a year and a half ago, but right now it's reaching this point where it's actually the one of the sharpest needs facing humanity right now is to actually, for this thing to actually take root and develop. And let's talk about what that would mean.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've seen, it's a sign of how extreme these times are and how dangerous they are. We've seen the most powerful and widespread protests in the last year and a half that we've ever seen, and probably, if not ever, close to, if not more than we've ever seen in certainly generations in this country, if not ever. And that's a response to just how hideous and ugly this regime is. At the same time, we have seen, and this is part of the characteristic of fascism, and I want people to really, really hear this, and if you disagree, call me and tell me why you think this is wrong, because I don't think you can. Every crisis that this regime survives makes it stronger. Every outpouring and uprising against it, which is really important, all the protests, if it does not go to the extent of stopping the nightmare and driving the regime from power, the regime lashes back. Fascism, the character of fascism, is that it can absorb different acts of resistance while constantly throwing the opposition off balance and slamming forward. They have the power of the state. They have the Congress, they have the Senate, they have the executive, they have the judiciary, and now they're going to lock it down even more in a way that is going to usher in changes that people, frankly, right now can't even imagine. The brutality and the enormity of the changes of a changed Supreme Court, a fully cemented fascist Supreme Court. And so the key thing is the protest has been incredibly important, and it shows the potential. But what needs to happen now, and it doesn't happen with everybody all at once. It happens with, you know, right now we need hundreds of people to step forward and take this up decisively and be part of carving out a new path that thousands and tens of thousands and ultimately millions, and hopefully soon millions, will follow together with us. But we need people who are in the streets raising the demand, not just get rid of Scott Pruitt, righteous thing to demand, not just stop the Muslim ban and stop it once and then it goes forward a year later, it's three new iterations and it's approved and locked in place. not just stop this or stop that, and then people get tired and the regime barrels forward, but the regime must go. The nightmare must end. The whole regime must go. That's the demand we have to raise, and that's the demand we have to fight for. And that, if people were to take up that demand, and this is what we're putting on the stage tomorrow all over the country, you should show up, you should bring your friends, and you should be part of carving out a path that says, okay, all this outrage, all this upset, if we were to move in this way and nonviolent, massive, sustained protest, we have to get organized for that. If we were to do that, starting with tens of thousands of people in different cities and not stopping day after day after day till we grow to millions, you could create a political situation where the regime is forced out. And I repeat, this is not some harebrained scheme. This has been done. This has been done all over the world. Nonviolent, massive, sustained struggle. But it requires people to get out of their comfort zone and to stop believing the illusion, and frankly, at this point, a year and a half in, when there are children in cages, the self-delusion that this regime will somehow, you know, level off, that we could survive it, that it won't go to new depths, that somebody else is going to stop it, and it's not going to happen. Only the people can stop this, and right now, people need to step into this and become part of organizing this. And we're going to come from different perspectives. I'm never going to stop fighting for an actual revolution. I think that's the core of what humanity needs, to really get to the root of this problem. But people should come into this who believe in the principles of America, who think that Trump is a betrayal of that. We have people in this organization already who are coming from very different political perspectives. That is a strength of ours. And there's room for everybody. But there's no room for people to sit back and continue to frankly, look at with the attitude that it's really bad, but maybe if I keep quiet, it won't affect me and those I most care about. Mm-hmm. And that's immoral. That's morally bankrupt. I'm sorry. And I know there's people who are hearing this who flirted with that idea and don't want to be that person. So you should come out. There is a way for us to act together, shoulder to shoulder, learning from each other, forging a community that is frankly quite uplifting and liberating, because we're actually saying in the name of humanity, we refuse to accept a fascist America. And this is a great moment of tremendous peril. The regime is slamming ahead. It's escalating. It's doubling down. It's also a moment when people are aroused, they're disturbed, they've been shaken out of their normalization, and there's a lot of potential to move them. But we need organizers to step forward. We need people who are willing to say, okay, I'll go down that road. I never thought I'd be that person, but the world has thrust conditions in my face that I can't swallow any longer. And that's how it always is. The Freedom Riders did not grow up imagining, I mean, nobody'd ever heard of a Freedom Rider. The conditions were put in their face and they couldn't turn away. And we need people who are willing to be people who step in and start and carve out a new path and know that what's the mechanisms and the political habits that have gotten us to a place where we have fascists in power are not the mechanisms and political habits we can continue to rely on to remove that regime.
All right. Well, let's talk to Michael on, I guess it's on line three. He asks, okay, you get rid of Trump and then what?
Michael, are you there?
Apparently not. Well, we can speak to his question at this point, and which is, you get rid of Trump, and then what?
Well, I think that this is where the difference between driving out a regime, which frankly is realistic, whereas hoping that somebody will, you know, impeach him absent some massive struggle from below or remove him through investigations, which, you know, I mean, he gave a speech in Montana, Trump did, where he said straight up, we will never back down, never, ever. We will never give up. We will fight on till victory. And he's basically swearing, just like he did in 2016 when he said if he lost the election, you know, he wouldn't accept the election results. He's saying now, look, you're not removing me. I mean, he's whipping up his Nazi base around that determination. So not only is it unrealistic that he'll be removed absent some massive struggle from below, the other part of what happens if you have a struggle from below that removes a is you create a different political crisis in the whole and political situation in the whole country that reverberates around. And just picture, if you have millions of people who come in the streets and stay in the streets demanding that the regime must go because we don't want to see immigrants ethnically cleansed. We don't want to see Muslims banned. We don't want to see women slammed backwards. We don't want white supremacist lynch mobs. We don't want the planet destroyed. We don't want nuclear bombs dropped in our names. If that's what people step out and act and struggle behind and forge community and a determined resistance behind, those people are changed. They're not the same after that. You know, millions of people are different. What they will tolerate and what they will demand. And here I think it's worth just one example historically where, you know, before Nixon was forced out, it's worth noting that he was implementing things like affirmative action. He was withdrawing from Vietnam. He was doing things, a lot of things that were frankly far to the left of a Democrat like Bill Clinton, not because he had some change of heart, not because Nixon was such an enlightened guy, but because there was such a political demand from below for a different direction that in order to maintain legitimacy, they had to make concessions. Same thing with Lyndon Johnson. He was a Southern racist. Everybody gives him credit now for being the civil rights president. He wasn't a civil rights president. He was a white Southerner racist who used the N-word almost up until the day he signed that legislation, who was forced to make concessions because of the struggle from below. So the reason I'm giving these examples, ultimately we need a revolution that gets rid of a system that gives rise to any of this. But even short of that, if you drive out a regime, I don't know what comes after it. But I do know that you have that aroused population that has changed what they're willing to tolerate and what they're eager to demand and what they think they're capable of. And whoever is in power after that has to contend with that. And this is where the slogans, "This nightmare must end, the Trump-Pence regime must go," come together, because it's driving out a regime is the only way to reverse the overall momentum and direction in society of this nightmare. And whoever's in power after that is going to have to make some concessions in response to that. And we will have to struggle to go forward. You know, that'll be a big, you know, I'd be lying if I thought that I could predict exactly how it will go down. I can predict if we don't do it, they will lock in fascism. And this will be a catastrophe for humanity. I mean, really, really, whether we survive as a species is an open question if this regime remains in power.
Mm-hmm. All right, Anthony's been waiting quite a while, and why don't we go to Anthony and see what he has to say, okay? Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Hi, it's Anthony E. Kemp. Part of my question has to do with some of the superpowers like Obama. I'm a black American. I'm from Flint, Michigan. I'm an artist. I've always been the indifference or whatever. But I believed in the Obama situation from the long haul, like from my great-grandmother's stories about what it took to get a black man into this sort of regime in power and what changes could be done. I know it was impossible for him to go for, you know, this super black, how are we going to change it? Let's do what Martin did and Malcolm and mix it and do something great. But my point is, I'm with you on this regime change. If I were sitting in the room with an Obama, what is it that I would say to one of these superpowers or an Oprah or some of these people that I know along this artist line understand what you're saying, but they're in this superpower position? What would you say to them? What steps would they take? What should an Obama do, for instance?
You know, we don't have a lot of time. First of all, thanks for calling in, Anthony.
Sorry. Yeah, I have a lot more to say, but I'm starting there. That was it. You know.
Pardon me?
He's starting there.
I have a lot to say about that as a black American who's born and raised here, born in 1963 in Flint, Michigan, shot at when I was 7 years old. I understand racism. It's all bullshit. All of that to me in this regime is a bunch of crap. And I know that part of this is going to have to be the rise of black Americans, like the sort of self-created black Americans that are here.
All right, Anthony, Sansara can give you a very quick answer because we only have about a minute and a half left. So, Sansara, can you speak to that?
First of all, Anthony, I urge you to come out tomorrow. You agree with us about the regime. Be there tomorrow and bring everybody you know. And it is true. The last thing you said, black America has a big role to play in this. It's incredibly true. I mean, the struggles of black people in the history of this country have made not only profound changes for black people, but have spurred and inspired all kinds of other people to stand up. And this is an incredibly important time for that to happen. Everybody needs to step forward, but it is true. that there's a special contribution to be made by people, black people struggling against this regime and for a different world. In that context, you know, I have to say, Obama came out and said, we hope for Trump's success. His success is our success. And I think that reflects the truth that you were getting at when you said Obama is limited. If you're going to be the commander-in-chief of this system, you're going to be constrained by that. And that's, he's speaking on behalf of the system when he says something like that, which is why we can't rely on him and or any of the Democrats. We have to rely on ourselves. And I realize that's a bigger discussion. I hope you come out tomorrow and we have that discussion. And I urge you to go to the RevCom.us site and watch the whole film by Bob Avakian on the Trump-Pence regime must go, and keep in dialogue, but let's join in struggle as we do.
All right, Sansara, thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll have you back again real soon to actually continue this, because I think there's a lot of people who have a lot of questions that are trying to dig into this and are concerned about what's going on and what role they need to play in this. That brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and my engineer today, Teddy Robinson. I also want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. All right, we're going to go out now with Outer National's cover of Bob Dylan's When the Ship Comes In. Talk to you again next week. Jerk!